Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
It's The Amazing Show, featuring the amazing James Randi. For more information on all things Randi, including the Million Dollar Challenge, head to randi.org. Hello and welcome to The Amazing Show. I'm Justin Robert Young from iTricks.com, and we join you today from the Isaac Asimov Library, as always, at the James Randi Educational Foundation. I am joined by the man who makes the show, the amazing James Randi. How you doing?
I'm all a flutter.
As you always are. Well, we have a topic this week from one of our listeners, Matthew Boynton. He says, hello from Japan. I've greatly enjoyed your podcast so far, and I was wondering if Randi could shed some more light on Project Alpha.
Oh, yeah, that came just before Project Beta, I believe. Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah, well,
that was a, Project VHS.
That made a lot of news. We got into Time magazine with it, and, it sort of resounded down through the ages ever since. It was an interesting thing, how it got its title, as a matter of fact. This was many years ago, many, many moons ago, as they say. I got a call from a letter, I should say. First a letter from a gentleman who suggested, I'm an amateur magician. If you ever need to send somebody to infiltrate a lab someplace where they're doing psychic work and such, just to show them that they can be fooled, I'd like to be considered for that. And I looked at the letter and said, okay, that I should keep that on hand. I didn't, what am I going to do, file it under would-be phonies or something? I just assigned it the name Alpha and stuck it in there in a file. But with less than 2 weeks after that, I got a second letter from another young fellow in a different part of the country altogether who didn't know the first one, suggesting essentially the same thing. He said that he was an amateur mentalist and he was capable of fooling scientists, he thought, and that these scientists maybe should be put in their place by being shown that they can be fooled. And I put that in the folder, and lo and behold, it wasn't long after that that I saw in the news the announcement of St. Louis University, Washington University in St. Louis, yes. Missouri, I'm sorry, and a Professor Phillips out there, and a fellow named Mark Schaefer, his assistant, who were applying for money from the McDonnell Foundation. That was the McDonnell Douglas Aircraft Corporation Foundation. And they had been granted $500,000, which was a lot of money back then. It's a lot of money now.
Mm-hmm.
And that funded them very handsomely. And they announced in their press release that they were going to look for children who could bend spoons with their minds, because somehow old man McDonnell, now now deceased, after all, he was 90-something at that time, and that was many years ago.
Oh, long full life.
There you go. He was determined that he wasn't going to die until he had found out whether or not there was life after death. Now, how bending spoons could possibly contribute to his knowledge of that subject, I have no idea. But he did settle for Phillips suggesting that studying spoon-bending children would be a good way to get your feet wet, so to speak.
And step in the right direction.
So they announced in their press release that they were looking for children who had psychic occasions in their lives, and not necessarily bending spoons, but anything psychic. And so I went to the Alpha file and said, ha-ha, maybe it's time to unleash Alpha on the world. First thing I did was I sent a letter off to Phillips and said who I was and what I did. And it turned out that he knew full well what I did. And was not very receptive of my letter, but I simply explained to him. I said, if you need to have someone to assist you in advising you on the ins and outs of such an investigation, perhaps since you don't have any knowledge of conjuring, I assume, I would be willing to serve in that capacity without charge, as long as my expenses are paid. And I thought that was a pretty generous offer. Well, Phillips wrote me back, and he told me simply, and almost in so many words, we don't need that kind of help. Thank you very much. We're scientists, and we know what we're doing.
Now, this is after the Stanford stuff with Geller and other previous scientific wings.
Oh, yes.
Because
Geller pretty well established spoon bending as a psychic event
in
the minds of the naive. And so I thought, well, these people are pretty ripe then. So now it's time to marshal the forces of evil. And I got a hold of the two young fellows. As I said previously, they didn't know one another.
And we could really just quick identify the forces of evil.
Indeed. Steve Shaw, who is now known as Banachek the Mentalist.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Shaw was from South Africa. And Mike...
Edwards.
I couldn't think of it. Isn't that awful? I blocked on... Sorry, Mike. And Mike Edwards. And Mike was an experienced mentalist, more so than Steve at that point, as a matter of fact, and a magician. And he worked kids' parties and young adult groups and whatnot. And he was, I guess, an advanced amateur, I could put it that way.
Okay.
But they were both in their teens. They were both young guys. And I thought that would be ideal. So I mustered them, got them together on a conference long-distance call and introduced them to one another. And I said, we've got to make an agreement in advance. I will not cause Phillips or Schaefer or the Washington University any embarrassment. I will agree with you in advance that if it comes to a case of them committing themselves to accepting what you kids do when you get into the lab, if you get into the lab, because they had only applied at that point, we will agree that in advance that should that occasion come about when we're going to publish and we're going to make them look rather little in the eyes of their colleagues and in the eyes of the public, that we will first admit to them that this was a fake and we will blow our cover right away. And they said, yes, that's only fair, because as it turned out, they got to know Phillips very well. They went in there for the next two or three years on weekends and on holiday periods, never being paid a cent, only their expenses. That's all their meals and hotels and such. And they got to like Phillips. They felt sorry for him because it was so easy to fool him and Schaefer.
Yeah.
They were both pushovers because they had believed in this sort of thing. And they believed that the kids couldn't possibly fool them because they were academics, you see.
Yeah.
Well, I had them apply to the, just to go back a bit, I had them apply to the lab. And I said, but when you apply, you've got to have something to say. You can't just say, I'd like to do this. You've got to have some sort of example of something that has happened to you that in the past that's psychic. I said, I'm not going to assist you with that. I'm not going to write the letters for you. You have to do this on your own because... this is something that you've got to do, and you've got to be able to show at the end of it that I didn't assist you in designing tricks or any such thing.
Yeah.
And they agreed to that, and they came up with stories that were just priceless. Steve Shaw said, for example, that...
this has got to be my favorite. I love Shaw's.
Well, yeah. And I was so surprised and edified when I heard what they came up with as their respective stories. And they didn't consult with one another. They came up with them stories independently. Steve Shaw said that when he was a kid in South Africa, that they had a root cellar. Now, a root cellar is simply an excavation underneath a home where you store vegetables and things like that. And old trunks and clothing and, I suppose, anything you want to get out of sight. And he said, but they had food stores down there, too, and they were plagued with rats. And so his father had set rat traps down there, but he forbade Steve to go down there because when Steve went near a rat trap, it fired off. And he said he didn't know why, but it was something, some sort of vibration that he put out or something, and he fired off the rat trap. This is totally fictional.
But
Steve made this up as a good story, and I applauded it. I thought, that's great. And when I told Mike Edwards, Edwards said, well, I'll tell you my story. He laughed. He thought that was famous. And he told me his story. He said that he had discovered as a young kid that his mother told him the story that when he was in utero, in other words, when his mother was carrying him about in her tummy, that she backed into a cattle fence and got an electric shock from an electric cattle fence, and that he was born psychic.
Now, there we go.
You can't make up stories like
that. The way
this.
It's you done. Just can't. That's how you make psychics.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. These are two sufficiently different stories. Well, the long story made short, is that they were the two kids who were accepted. Boom, just like that.
I love this story as just a parable to, I think what a lot is done here in the JRAF, that we can all be fooled. This is straight out of a carnival barker's mouth, these kind of stories. And at this academic institution, that's how they singled it out.
Yep, they selected the kids on the strength of their phony stories. Now, what happened after that, of course, for the next couple of years was very interesting because, again, I didn't design anything for them. I said, you're on your own. You've got to use your skills as amateur magicians to fool these people. And they won't be hard to fool because they already believe that these phenomena are real and they believe that you're real. That's why they've brought you into their lab. I was about to say hired them, but they didn't hire them because they didn't pay them. So they would report to me. They would get on conference phone and they would report to me as soon as they were finished with the project. They went in on the weekend or on a holiday period of some kind. And then I would immediately prepare a letter to the effect that suppose they said we did A and B and C.
Mm-hmm.
And they described the effects that they had done to fool the scientists. And what I would then do is within the next couple of weeks, I would fire a letter off to Phillips and say, by the way, I thought I would advise you that if these subjects, whoever they are, as if I didn't know who they were, ever do this, that, and the other thing, A, B, and C, you should do this, that, and the other thing, you see, giving them advice. Now, you'd think that it would dawn on Phillips that somehow I had found out about these things and that my describing what they had just finished doing a week before might tip them off. But it didn't. He was exceedingly naive, and he wanted desperately to believe. He wanted it to be true, otherwise he didn't have a project, you see.
Yeah.
And if I ever got a letter, or a response, pardon me, from Phillips, sometimes it was only a phone call, he would simply tell me, no, you don't understand, these kids are quite genuine, and we don't need advice. No, we know how to handle this sort of thing. We're scientists, after all. And it was the same story.
Yeah.
And he wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
Neither he nor Schaefer were prepared in any way to handle these kids because the kids were good and they were getting better every time they went in there.
Mm-hmm.
They learned the weaknesses of the investigators, you see.
Yeah, I mean, especially they were playing, even as magicians, to an audience of one, which is exactly. A lot easier to get a read on.
Exactly. So things went on until finally the kids called me in some alarm and said, oh, Phillips and Schaefer have prepared a paper that they're going to present to the Parapsychological Association's annual convention. And I said, okay, guys, now we know. What have you got to do? We've got to call a halt to this. And I said, but knowing Phillips, if I attempt to go to them, or even if you attempt to go to him and say, hey, it's all been a trick, he's not going to believe it.
Mm.
Now, this sounds incredible. Phillips was and Schaefer were not prepared to believe such a thing. They had invested so much in this of their personal efforts and whatnot. They were just not prepared to accept that it would be fake.
Yeah.
So I said, we'll do it sort of roundabout, but I know a way to do it. There was a fellow named Marcello Truzzi. He was a sociologist at the University of Michigan in Ypsilanti. And sociologists don't get much chance to write scientific papers. They don't get a chance to publish, in other words, and flourish because of publishing. And so anything that came Marcello's way, now he was an experienced magician himself. His family had been a family of clowns in Italy, as a matter of fact. And the clowns all know the magic tricks and such. They work with these things. And so his family was quite experienced in the field of show business. And so he knew what Geller was doing. He knew what all the so-called psychics were doing. But he was playing a fence-sitting idea because as a sociologist, he wanted to be aloof from this and just say, oh, we'll investigate both sides of it. Okay, investigate both sides of it. But you find out right away that there's nothing on the one side and everything's on the other side. So he refused to acknowledge that, refused to find that.
Or at least one side as a long pattern of failure.
Yeah. Now, he had been, Marcello, had been editor of Skeptical Inquirer at first, because I suggested him for the job because I knew of his experience. But then he decided as editor that there had to be an equal number of words in every issue of Skeptical Inquirer from the believers and from the skeptics. And we just drew a line on that and said, no, that's not going to happen, because the parapsychologists don't give the skeptics equal space, so we're not about to do it with them. And so he was replaced by Ken Frazier eventually, and Ken's been there ever since. And that was a good move. And unfortunately, I had to bear the embarrassment of having introduced him to PsychOp and caused them all this trouble. So it turned out that that Marcello was sort of ripe for this, because we allowed him, by certain surreptitious means, by mentioning it to the wrong person who we knew was a gossip, that the kids weren't genuine. We just said it that way. We just said, no, we knew the kids were ringers. And we knew that that would get to Marcello, and that Marcello would immediately blab it, because he was the world's greatest gossip. And that's exactly what he did. He told Phillips right
true
away.
True to form,
Told Phillips right away. And it got out sort of in another way, too. There was a fellow named Scott Rogel, now deceased, as Marcello is also deceased, I must add. And Scott Rogel was a writer for Fate magazine. In those days, not owned by Llewellyn Publications as it is today, but owned by the Fullers. And there's a married couple who founded the magazine and published it. It was an interesting news rag sort of about the psychics, and supported it all gushingly, of course. Otherwise, it couldn't have functioned and survived. So Scott Rogel, who wrote most of their articles for them, their featured articles, was a great believer and had a lot invested in it too, because without a psychic world, he didn't exist. He was out of business. So he wanted to promote that, and he did, shamelessly. But Scott Rogel was going to interview me at this Parapsychological Association convention. I was invited to speak briefly for them, very briefly for them. And when I was backstage, we allowed him to see me with the two kids sitting at a conference table over in the corner and laughing and slapping our thighs and whatnot. And so Scott Rogel got the idea, wait a minute, maybe he's in cahoots with these two kids. And we found out later that he had then gone to Marcello, and Marcello had said, yes, I heard that, you know. And of course that got to Phillips right away. So what Phillips did, and I've got copies of both papers. He had already issued his paper that he was going to read at the PA conference. Mm-hmm. And it shamelessly, just directly endorsed the Alpha Kids as genuine.
Yeah.
No question of it.
And that's how you got the original paper, right?
Yeah.
He had given it to Sean Edwards just so they would be able
to look over
it, right?
That's right. And so then Steve Shaw was able to get a copy of the revised paper as they were going to actually present it at the PA conference.
Yeah.
And it was full of modifiers. It said, these purportedly psychic children, instead of these psychic children, and they claim that so-and-so, no, they say that so-and-so. Well, you see, these things were all modified now. They changed a lot of adjectives and adverbs and put in little sentences that more or less said, which is possibly true, instead of which is undeniably true.
Yeah.
So they just changed the language of it.
Which also scientifically leaves a gigantic hole.
Of course, yes.
Well, if you have questions, why didn't you test it?
Now, this did not please the parapsychologists, because they're looking for something positive. They've always, and to this day, they're still looking for some proof of it. For a while, to them, Geller was the proof, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And now, not so much, of course. Although there are still some diehards that will still insist that Geller is the real thing, and was back then even. Ho, ho, ho. But we had done our job. We had done our job. But we called it a press conference with Time magazine. Mm-hmm. We got a featured article in Time magazine explaining what this is all about. And we appeared on the Today Show in those days with Bryant Gumbel. And we revealed the whole thing as a hoax. Just a matter of days before the whole thing blew up in everybody's face.
Oh, wow.
And so the parapsychological world was really highly embarrassed over it. But they had been warned. We had offered to cooperate with them and to give them advice and act as consultants free of charge, and they had turned it down.
Yeah, so this was more of an exercise in how far they would go further their own.
We were just trying to show that they could be fooled, and we were going to be able to prove that they were fooled.
Yeah.
Now, to this day, I am told that people like Phillips and some of the rest of them there are still saying, oh, no, there were times when the kids were the real thing. There's no question of it. They have to cling to some sort of semblance of having had good common sense.
Yeah.
So they still insist that in some cases the kids were, well, how do you explain this then? And of course, you can't explain all of it because sometimes it appears to work because you gotta get lucky sometimes.
Yeah.
But the kids can give you speeches and speeches on that, of course. And the things they did with them were outrageous. There was one case with Mike Edwards, as a matter of fact. He said he was wearing a black pullover, a dead black colored pullover, and they were taking Polaroid pictures of one another, trying to produce spirit pictures. And he produced a picture of a blonde woman with her mouth wide open as if like in a haunted thing, very, very fuzzy and out of focus, right against the black pullover that he was wearing.
Really?
It was what we call, what's the trade expression? Double exposure. Yes.
Ah.
Because that woman was Mike, who had taken off the black pullover and he had a white shirt on underneath it. That registered on the Polaroid. And then before advancing the film, he took the second one with a flash, you see. And so the shirt registered over that. And it was just a simple double exposure.
Yeah.
But they accepted it as real. And Phillips went around showing it to everybody. Look. You can see this woman here. It's a blonde woman.
Wow.
Looks very much like Mike, as a matter of fact. if he'd thought of it, he would have seen that it was Mike, but out of focus.
How much did the Project Alpha do for the idea of academics, you know, rationalizing or giving proof to these kind of parapsychology?
Well,
things?
The Parapsychological Association, when they published their report on this, came out with the end statement saying, very, very, very cunningly, they said that we suggest at this point, because of what we've learned with Project Alpha, that parapsychologists who are in a position where the subjects may be cheating, ho, 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 I mean, what else, where the subjects may be cheating, should consult a member of the Society of American Magicians, the Magicians Guild, or the Magic Circle, knowing full well that I didn't belong at that point to any of these three organizations, you see. So they were specifying somebody else other than James Randi.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were eventually getting around.
That old white
and of course, none of the parapsychologists paid any attention to that at all, except John Beloff. John Beloff in Scotland.
Okay.
Did pay attention to that, and he got in touch with me directly and said, we have a psychic here who is performing in a darkened room with the Polaroid cameras on him and such, and the video recorder. And I said, well, John, what you've got to do is you've got to actually have the video cameras going, though he insisted the video cameras couldn't be going.
Ah.
And I said, all you do is you cover the red tally light with some black tape and it'll actually be going. You know, that would be cheating. That would be lying. I said, but wait a minute. If he's lying to you, you'll catch him this way and it can't do any harm. If he's not lying to you, it's not going to be a bad thing to do because there'll be nothing to catch him at.
Yeah.
And
you'll be able to do it.
Beloff said, Beloff, also now deceased, apparently, he said, well, I find that very difficult, but I will follow your advice. And he did, and he caught the kid. Boom. It was very, very evident.
Yeah.
The kid looked at the camera, saw the tally light was not lit, and so he assumed the camera was off. And, of course, it was on. It was recording. And they could see it in the next room.
Oh, man.
So it was one of those things where the one person, Beloff, who was a leading parapsychological researcher, and he was at one time president of the Parapsychological Association, as a matter of fact, for a long period of time. And so it did follow up with that. But from that moment on, we never heard a thing. Nobody wants advice. They think they're too smart to be fooled.
Yeah.
And they're exactly the people who will get fooled.
I think for me, and do you get a sense that I have a hard time wrapping my head around exactly how seriously some of these studies were taken, you know, maybe 30, 35 years ago. Whereas now, not to say there isn't plenty of people claiming that you know, this kind of stuff exists, but a university kind of staking their reputation on it, like let's say Stanford did with Geller, I guess it doesn't seem to me as prevalent? I mean, am I wrong on that? Or
well, let me interrupt you on one point here. Stanford University has never endorsed Geller or anything like Geller.
Okay.
It was Stanford Research Institute.
There we go.
Connected with Stanford University. That's true.
Yes.
But not working. Okay. No, not working through Stanford University at all. Stanford Research Institute and the Geller research was done after hours. It was not done officially by Stanford Research Institute. It was done by two scientists, Putoff and Targ, at the Research Institute. But it was not done officially. It was done after hours. It was just sort of a shoestring
thing. A hobby.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But when it was presented to Nature magazine, it was written up as if it was done under the auspices of SRI.
Okay.
And that was something they should not have done. That was not ethical at all.
Yeah, it still had the name on it.
Yeah.
So do you think it's declined as a result of things like this? Or?
No. The parapsychologists still need it to be true. They not only want it to be true, they need it to be true, and they will overlook all kinds of massive evidence that stands to the contrary. But nonetheless, they go along with it. They go along with that, all of these things, and they let the psychics run over them like a Mack truck. They pay no attention to the objections. They just accept everything that comes along, and they never, never ask advice from outside of the academic world.
Do you think something like this could happen again on the scale that you guys did it with Project?
It's ready to happen anytime.
Could actually do a Project Beta?
It's ready to happen anytime at all. And Project Beta is always in the wings.
Questions, comments, topic suggestions, email randy@itricks.com.
itricks.com.